Canadian pianist Jan Leszewski has just put out a new recording featuring music of Mendelssohn. He says he loves this composer. There's so many notes, even though the message is fairly simple. But once you overcome those notes, wow, it's just so clear what that message is. He says his collaborators also make this recording quite special. You can hear why on this edition of New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julia Macher. I'm talking with Jan Leszewski, who has a brand new recording out. He's celebrating the music of Mendelssohn. This is his fourth recording already, and he's just 23 years old. Welcome, Jan.
Such a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
On this new recording, I know you're excited about the music of Mendelssohn, and there's a few reasons for that. It's very challenging, yet it's very fun to play. Can you talk more about that?
Mendelssohn wrote very elaborate music. It's music that has a lot of notes to say a very simple thing. And I love that, because once you've overcome all the notes, everything comes to life. Becomes so simple as if it was always in front of you, but first you have to learn all the notes, and that's a challenge in his music.
I know, as I'm hearing you talk about so many notes, it makes me think of Mozart and how he was once criticized for writing too many notes, and he said, no, there's just enough notes. And it also made me think about how sometimes the genius of these two composers is compared because they were both very young, talented, you know, composers and musicians. What do you think about that? Should they be compared?
I think there's merit and there's a reason that they're compared. Actually, when I approach Mendelssohn's music, I can see the influence of Mozart. And I think, for instance, his concertos are similar in some ways to Mozart concertos. For example, in the concertos, there are thousands of passages. They just are never ending. And the places they lead you can be really intriguing. There's also many places in Mozart's concertos where there are endless passages that have melodic content, that are beautiful, that have a role to play, but are daunting because you don't know where to begin, where to end, how to phrase them. And I think that translates quite well into Mendelssohn. And the fascinating thing is, I think Mendelssohn has one foot in the classical world and one foot in the romantic world, and finding that middle, where to balance those two, is the challenge when playing his music.
On this recording, you're highlighting his two main piano concertos and then some solo piano works. And you were really intentional in the order in which you placed these pieces on the recording. Can you talk more about that?
Yes, thank you very much for noticing. I realize that today, when people are streaming albums on services or if they listen on the radio, they don't hear that. But to me, the order of a recording still has something and holds a place in my heart. I love personally putting on a recording and listening to the entirety, and I hope I will surprise and enchant those listeners who do that by the order.
And there are sort of hints of the concertos in these works that follow them. Is that correct?
Of course, the music is from various periods in Mendelssohn's life. But what I think the recording shows is that Mendelssohn had his own language, his own sort of approach to writing, especially for the piano, from the very beginning. Of course, the first concerto was written when Mendelssohn was very young, and it already has a character, has a style, has a certain way of approaching the piano, which continues as a common thread throughout Mendelssohn's life.
Now, you just said he wrote that first piano concerto when he was very young. I think he was like 22, and you're what, 23?
Yes.
So are you hearing the composer's youth coming through in this work?
Well, Yes, perhaps I'm 23, but I've lived, so to speak, a very long life. And it's hard to believe. I of course, have a youthful exuberance still and plenty of energy to go around, but my life has been quite different than a standard youth. And I think for Mendelssohn, that probably was the same thing. So youthful energy is perhaps the only manifestation. I don't see any other youthful indulgences, so to speak, or excuses. There's no excuses to be made for Mendelssohn's age either in his writings. So there's not very much I can say about that.
He was writing this, I believe, for a love interest at the time. Do you think that might have impacted how buoyant and light it sounds?
Well, doesn't it always? Isn't a composer writing for a love interest always put more into the music than normal? Don't they always try harder than... I think there's so many examples from Chopin to Beethoven to Mendelssohn in this case, who, writing for their loves, put so much more into the music, and I always hope that that comes across also when it's being performed.
The 17 variations follow that first piano concerto, and these are labeled as serious variations. They really do have a serious tone to them. Can you talk a little bit about maybe what the composer was experiencing, because these were written later in life?
I think Mendelssohn always struggled with being seen as a composer of lighter music, music that wasn't as emotionally charged as perhaps other composers before him. And that probably led him to title these variations the Variations Sérieuses, the Serious Variations. To me, what strikes me the most is the way he structured the variations. It's not a theme with many different takes on what it could be, but there's this emotional arc to it from beginning to end, from this very elegant chorale almost that is the theme, to the incredibly on the edge of your seat coda that concludes them. And the very different steps along the journey, the various steps along the journey, which are paced in such a way that we have a moment to breathe. It's not only working towards that climax at the very end. There are introvert variations that are in a major key, leading to a little bit of a brighter emotion. Those that then sort of recede back into the darkness. And the way they are connected to each other, I think, is unique in a set of variations.
The Concerto for Piano and Orchestra No. 2 in D minor is a completely different mood from his first piano concerto. It's darker, it's filled with more emotions. And I found that kind of interesting because he wrote it shortly after he was married, right after his honeymoon.
Well, obviously now he wasn't writing anymore for his love, and see the emotions, how they've changed. No, I think Mendelssohn struggled with writing this piece, and it took him much longer than the norm for him. He also wanted to showcase himself, what he could do, how he had grown. I think the emotional depth, perhaps, is of a more mature Mendelssohn, but the way he once again uses that emotion and writes for the piano, it's still this elegant and delicate writing, but it's very charged. And that, for that reason, this concerto, I think, is even more challenging to perform than the first, and more challenging to understand as an artist and as an audience member as well.
Now, I know the orchestral accompaniment is also much more intricate. Could you talk a little bit about that?
In the first, it's more of a conversation where the orchestra says something and I will return the favor. But here, it's woven in, very much like in Schumann, for example, where the piano passage break goes around what's going on, what's occurring in the orchestral part. And for me as a pianist, that's actually a very rewarding experience. It poses numerous challenges in interpretation and in maintaining the energy within a piano part when you don't have very much melodic content. But I think when the final result, when we have musicians who are speaking together and who have inspiration by themselves, it can be a very interesting result.
I know you've really been enjoying working with the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra, and this was unique in many ways. In one way, of course, because they are conductorless, but you've worked with other conductorless orchestras, and yet you found this to even kind of go beyond that. Will you talk about this experience that you've been having?
It's always said that a performance of an orchestra should be chamber music. And it is, but it's on a very grand scale. Not always successful, I might add, because when you have such a large group on stage, there has to be a leader to show the way, to sort of point out those waypoints on the orchestral score. In this case, the musicians not only know their part, but they know the score. And that's very different from the norm and inspirational, because they have an idea not only of how to improve their own playing, but also how that fits in the grand scale. And the collaboration then takes really on that idea of chamber music. The most memorable moment was going into the booth in between the recording sessions, where in that 15-20 minute break, the musicians usually just, you know, go and relax between playing, and I go and listen to see what else needs to be done in the booth. And here we'd suddenly have 15 to 20 musicians come into the booth, and all of them were listening, all of them were curious, all of them wanted to hear something, improve upon something. And to see that dedication and to see that interest from every musician that forms the Orpheus, it was inspirational to me, and most certainly is unique.
I know that you're currently on tour with them. How long will that tour last?
Well, we have numerous tours actually interspersed over the course of the year. In May, we're doing an extensive European tour. In September, we're playing in Carnegie Hall, and in October, throughout North America. So, and then actually that continues later back into Europe once again in October. So we have a lot to look forward to, and based on this recording and the experiences, the mutual experiences we had, I'm certain that the concerts will be a great pleasure as well.
I was just thinking, as a musician, so much of your life is planned years in advance with those tours. With that in place, do you ever struggle with being in the moment now?
I've learned that's one of the most important things, I think, to learn as a musician, is to dedicate yourself fully to the moment. There's the periods that, of course, you wish you were playing something else, for example, or you feel like a certain part of your repertoire is at its peak, but then you just have to go into the next and continue to work. It's the one of the unfortunate things about the business, and I think it's still much better than the opera world, where and the stars are being booked 4 or 5 years in advance for things that they may or may not be able to sing down the road. I'm still a little bit narrower than that, and in the piano world it's a little less demanding, I think, as well.
I was just thinking, for some reason the word effervescent comes to mind when I think of Mendelssohn's music, and certainly the way you play it.
Thank you. Well, I certainly agree. It is effervescent, and it does have this, also somehow, this light in it. I don't mean lightness as far as touch. I mean this light as far as the sun. It's always as if the sun is shining in Mendelssohn's world.
Bringing the music of Mendelssohn to light on a new recording featuring Jan Leszewski with the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra. That's New Classical Tracks from American Public Media, with special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode. I'm Julie Amacher.